We're back in session. Any comments or questions from this morning? I realized afterward, or Rose pointed out, that most of you may not have scanning devices at home, and so you had no way of sending me your artwork from the assignment, the exercise when we were talking about word recognition, but here's an example. Rose did her work and we've scanned it. And you can see from her rebus, I can pray. So she's communicating the idea of prayer. She has a can of beans. Or actually, maybe this is, you can eat your bean, peas. Eat your peas. I can, and then she's praying in a cathedral. And so then I suggested that she interpret that into an ideogram, The cross stays up at the top. The cathedral becomes a A-frame, and the person reduces down to a circle or a point. And so that becomes the letters T-A-O, the Tao, or the path. So that is an example of the exercise. Just having a little fun with recognizing words, in this case a Chinese word rather than an English word. So when you have a chance to make copies and get a scanned version, send them along. And if it's tomorrow that you have to send it in to me, that's fine. Our next session isn't until Wednesday. And for Wednesday, you want to continue reading in Ethics, and you want to continue reading in the David Mamet book, which, of course, we haven't gotten to yet, The Secret Knowledge. And the literature assignment will be reading the story Daffodil by Kenneth Morris in Sophie 24. Did everybody get their copy of Sophie 24 that was supposed to get a copy of Sophie 24? Good. I take silence as nobody had any problems with that. So it's Daffodil's very short story, about 4 or 5 pages, and that's what we will consider for our literature segment. Okay, any comments or questions before we move on?
Well, the sentence in David Mamet, I just want to describe it. I didn't know if you gave an assignment.
I don't have any specific page assignments, just continue reading Aristotle, continue reading Mamet. Hopefully you've already done a little bit of reading in it. And if not, you have a catch-up to do. And then read the Daffodil. That's all. Okay, moving right ahead. This is our session in the arts, and the theme of this first session after lunch for this class is going to be the light of inspiration. Discerning the light of inspiration in the arts. In this case, we're starting with music, and music is meant to be the sound of light. I'm getting quite a bit of feedback from somebody. Anyway, still getting feedback from somebody. Music is meant to be the sound of light. It is meant to charge the mind with divine possibilities, to help us commune with angelic forces. There are angelic forces that are the ensouling force of music. And in this session, today, we will listen for the light within each of several pieces of music. So just, you might find it helpful to mute until I'm done with the music so that you can hear the music without any distraction. I'm still getting a lot of feedback from somewhere. I guess I can mute everybody and you'll still hear the music. Okay. Let me now get the music going. Unmute, and we will have some discussion. Okay. Comments and questions. Is everybody able to hear that okay? And what were your impressions? Anybody? What was the light of inspiration behind that piece of music? I don't know. We're still getting some nasty feedback from somebody. Moving papers or something. Somebody needs to mute.
Carl, I'm not sure that the audio was, at least for me, it wasn't very good on the music. And, of course, the sandstorm outcome of the Gobi Desert is really tough to
talk over,
but I think there was something going on with the audio, too.
Well, I don't know. Did anybody else have a problem with the audio?
Yes, I did.
I thought it was rather delightful, and there was, seemed like a movement along a path.
Uh-huh. Okay. Good. As far as the quality, I can't do much about that. I played it right on the computer, so you should have gotten it in exactly the same form as I was listening to it.
If you're on the phone.
On the phone, you might have had a problem, but I don't know. Nancy, you're on the phone. Did you have any problem? Or anybody on the phone? Okay. Some more input. We heard from Mary.
It was with the staccato. It was short, quick energy spurts, which I found very uplifting and delightful, as Mary had said.
Okay. How would that translate into, say, the impact on your aura?
To keep moving forward, like sort of onward and upward.
Okay. Other impressions?
So, usually when I hear music, Carl, I immediately sort of start choreographing it in my head. It's just a habit, I think.
That's fine.
From years of dancing. And so, music like that...
You're exhausted, in other words.
No, not at all. Actually, quite the opposite. Dancing to music like that actually kind of makes you want to dance. I mean, how can you sit still when you hear that? But anyway, I think the first thing that occurred to me is just sort of overwhelming sense of joy.
Okay.
And exaltation. In the sense that, you know, as other people have stated, it's quite uplifting. But even more than that, it's, you know, you sort of... I don't know. I feel myself almost like being baptized. You know, like you just feel clean after you
okay.
listen to it
Good.
For a while.
Good. Rose?
I had the image of a dance in a fairy glen.
You're back to the fairy glen, huh? Okay.
Just with all the joy and the exuberance of the fairies. Delighting in life.
Okay. We're still getting quite a bit of interference from somewhere. Feedback. Other input. All right. Well, yeah, go ahead.
Even a little playfulness, I felt. It was a real give and take back and forth. I mean, I just saw the zigzag, you know?
Yeah. I don't want to diminish the playfulness, because I think all the comments about that are quite fine. But to me, the essence of this was building courage. The staccato effect was little bursts, as Donna pointed out, little bursts of energy. And then they were all woven together in coherent musical patterns as though each one gathered a certain amount more of the courage to express yourself. The courage to enjoy life, for example. The courage to let it all hang out. The courage to be different. The courage to stand up for your convictions. I think this is a great piece of music to build courage by. All right, let's go to the second selection I have. And hopefully this will come through better for some of you. Here it goes. I'm going to mute for a moment, and then we'll play. Questions about that one. By the way, just for the record, the first piece was Scarlatti, Sonata in A Major. for any of you who gather, want to be able to play that again in the future. Scarlatti Sonata in A Major. This one is different. Comments, insights? Were you able to hear this one better?
You did not mute.
I did.
What did you?
Would somebody say something so I know I unmuted?
Yes.
There we go.
I felt very noble listening to that.
Okay. Very good. Rose?
It, to me, it represented a tremendous confidence and pride and joy. I mean, you just wanted to, you know, your chest just swelled with confidence.
Swelling chest syndrome. All right.
With confidence and pride and joy.
Okay.
And, you know, whatever it might be, a project or your country.
Right. Good. Other comments?
Yeah.
Order and right timing? Okay. Okay. Other input? Anybody?
Carl?
Yeah.
I'm sorry to bother you. I'm having all sorts of computer problems. That was Louise calling. The Harpers thought they were on, but they're not.
Oh, really?
It says they're on.
It says they're on.
They aren't.
Yeah.
Well, but they weren't. Maybe that's them.
Okay, yeah, they just disappeared, so maybe they're coming back on. I haven't seen them
yet. Yeah, I'm sorry to interrupt.
Okay. Getting back to the piece of music. Other comments, input?
I thought it sounded very orderly. There was almost a march element in it.
Yes, yes. In fact, march is in the title. other insights? Well, that was by Campra, Triumphal March from Tancredi.
Okay.
And the it blasted out a sense of celebration. And those of you who define it in terms of triumph or the march, joy, pride, of achievement, I think this would be the appropriate way to celebrate any achievement, any accomplishment of any degree, whether it's individual or in the community or in the nation. Good. I take it you're back and the problem's been resolved, Damon.
The screen looked like you were there, but we didn't hear anybody. And
okay.
So after a while, we called Judy. Everything looked the way we left it.
All right. Well, we've been sorry to hear you missed a little bit. We're doing music here, and the theme is discerning the light of inspiration within a piece of music. We started with Scarlatti Sonata in A Major. The last piece was Campra, Triumphal March. And here's the next one. Now let me get it set up here. And I'm going to mute. Well, I don't need to mute right now, probably. Let's just see how it goes. Thank you. Okay, comments on that piece?
Circles.
Circles. Circles within wheels.
I almost thought of a dance, you know, like a circle. Too.
Sure, yeah. Sure.
Dancing.
Well, go ahead, Rose.
I saw the beauty and the elegance of a dance, like at a ball or a great celebration.
Okay.
The beauty and the elegance of the dancers as they went through all the various steps and movements.
Okay, so that would have an element of coordination involved.
Yeah.
Other input. Yes.
Bill said joy.
Okay.
And I got celebration.
Okay. Other input.
I thought of harmony. As a matter of fact, even like bring more harmony for conflict, because there's that little section in the middle where it actually switches, I think, into a minor key and then resolves back into the major. But the sort of idea of things maybe going their separate ways but always resolving in unison.
Okay, there's a larger pattern that we may not be aware of. Yes, good. Other input. Well, the word that comes to mind for me is insouciance, the carefree life, devil may care, because I know, because of the certain knowledge that there is the larger pattern, and even if things seem to almost be spinning out of control as the circles go round and round, and everybody's having a little bit too much to drink anyway, and they're dropping off. They can't stand it. It's there's a larger pattern, and other people come in and take over and fill in. So there's that insouciance, the carefree life, and an underlying pattern of detachment that when the carousel of life seems to be going a little bit too fast, all we have to do is step off of it and look at the larger pattern, and that's detachment. In fact, it reminded me of, Christmas, Rose gave me a jigsaw puzzle of satyrs. And in the center of this, down near the bottom, I've already put it together. Down near the bottom, there's this group of about a dozen satyrs and nymphs whirling around in a frenzied dance. This is frenzy at its best. I'm sorry? Did somebody have something to say? Okay, we've got another one here, which we'll get to in a second. And see how this goes. Now, you may recognize that one.
Yes, I've got my bowl of popcorn ready.
Yeah, you bet.
Well, that's exactly why I picked this, because I wanted you to go beyond Poirot and Miss Marple.
And put down that magnifying glass.
And listen to the music without the concept of masterpiece hanging over your head. So I hope you did that. If not, at least that you recognize that this was, your association is with one specific usage of that, but the music itself stands independently and the light within it is something else.
Well, now, I was have...
Yes. Go ahead.
That was... Am I speaking or someone else?
Well, go ahead.
Okay. Well, that's also the music that my son was married to. That was what they walked down the aisle with. So it sort of reminds me of Destiny more than actually Masterpiece Theater.
Okay.
It's a lovely walk into Destiny.
They should have saved it for the honeymoon.
Oh, my.
Rose.
Well, I was trying to separate it and put down my popcorn, but so I don't know if this was because I couldn't separate it, or if is there a sense of adventure in the music?
Oh, I think you could definitely say there's a sense of adventure in the
music. Because I didn't know if I was not able to separate that out.
Could you elaborate on what that sense of adventure is a little bit more? You think this is good Talbot Monday music?
It just led me on and really like I was following a trail and I, you know, I had my magnifying glass and was...
Oh, you're back to Poirot.
But see, then I'm back to Sherlock Holmes but there was a sense of adventure of being led on towards something.
Other input.
I kind of had a sense to a trumpet even with announcements or a call to action or something.
That makes it good wedding music, as Judy...
Yes. Call to action.
Absolutely. A heralding of something new. Okay, other input. Okay, anticipation, good. Again, somebody is giving me a lot of feedback here. Right? Yes. I think this is somebody on the phone that's doing that.
Are they close to...
Judy, are you too close to your phone? Or Nancy, are you too close to the phone?
My problem is everything cable is out. My telephone, my cable, I can't get online. And so I'm having to use my cell phone for this part of the...
Okay.
It's not doing it now.
And if that's the case, then...
It's not doing it now.
It's only when you're not talking that we hear things, but... It is that probably is true. The my magic control panel here says it's a phone caller, so it's either there's only one or two of you, so it's one or the other.
Well, let me know because my phone they promised would be fixed.
Okay.
And it might be fixed now. It did ring earlier, but it was not a general call.
Okay. Well, during the break, you can find out. Anyway, other input on that one. The interesting, first of all, let me mention that the previous piece was Corelli, Violin Sonata in A, the one of the Seder dance. This one is Moret Rondeau. So it too was written for dance. But it certainly has many other apps. Application to it. My impression is the dawning of the light, and that is just another way of saying what many of you said, anticipation, the beginning of new things, the dawning of the light. But let's go on to the next one. Okay, comments.
I don't know if this is really seeing the light, but the word that came to me was harmony in this one.
Okay, that counts.
Carl, I almost thought of a fugue. I know even though this was not a fugue, but it was almost like there was a repetition of a theme, you know, that was a little bit different, the play that kept getting picked up, and so it was a continuation, just a little variation each time.
Right, okay, and so what does that fugue tell you?
Well, I mean, I'm thinking of just life, that, you know, there'll be repeated experiences, but each time you experience it, you come in with a different perspective, or you learn something and you grow from that. So
okay. Variations on the theme.
Yeah.
Okay, any other comments?
Truth.
Rose suggests truth. Anybody else? Is that a repeated whole H-O-L-E or W-H-O-L-E?
Repeated.
Oh, call, C-A-L-L. I misheard. Okay, calling forth. I think that's quite good. Who's doing the calling? Okay. Good. Who else? Well, I think these are all good insights. This is Boccherini String Quartet. I interpret it as attunement to the ideal. And that certainly fits the idea of harmony, harmonizing to the ideal, a harmonic response. It's almost, to me, at one point, it occurred to me that this is almost a variation on the theme of Om. And it's a summoning, an attunement. Truth certainly fits into that category. And what Betty just said about the summoning and calling, that's, I think, quite insightful. All right, we have one more, and then the period's over. Let me get it set up here.
Thank you.
Okay, comments.
I call it angelic chamber music.
Angelic chamber music? Well, that's pretty apt.
Well, to me, there was like a purity, and it wasn't coming across really clearly, and I think if you heard the real, you know, perfected clarity, it was very pure. You know, there were just lines of purity.
Okay. Well, I guess what did get through was good enough to express that to you.
Yes, yes.
Other comments?
First part was just like a wave coming up.
A wave coming
just
up.
Just a huge wave.
Okay.
Just rising to the heights.
A wave of?
Well, what, you know, whatever. Hopefully joy or.
Okay. Other comments? Okay.
Is there something in particular about the music of the Baroque period that inspired you to select these, or is there like a quality that all of that music embraces?
I think it represents a high point in the evolution of music.
And then I would like to point out that the majority of these compositions were Italian.
Oh, like Mozart.
Better represent. No. Scarlatti.
Yes, I know.
Baldi,
yeah. All right. Well, I happen to like the Baroque. I always believe in going for Baroque. Other input here on this one.
Sort of waves of dignity.
Okay. Very good. Coming from?
The divine.
Okay. Yes, I think majesty would be a word that, well, it was in fact a word that came to mind while I was listening to that. Majesty, authority. In fact, I would describe this as the soul takes control. And it's in perfect control of everything happening. And the majesty of the authority comes through and is palpable. That was Mozart's Serenade 6 in D. That's the end of this session, but a couple of observations. One is, I think everybody was very perceptive in tuning into the light of inspiration. And therefore, I think this is a great example of how nonverbal learning can occur. And I think everybody has demonstrated a vast improvement since we started doing these, listening to music and discerning the meaning of it a number of years ago in the Walden Ultra. This is the sort of thing I want to have incorporated on a regular, at least a weekly basis, if not more often, in Walden Grove, because the mind is very definitely stimulated in nonverbal ways by music. And the fact that we had such agreement as to the meaning indicates that there is a language of music, that the one of the greatest ways to train and enculturate the mind to respond to an intuition is through music. And of course, it's a communion with angels. Any further comments before we go on? Well, very good. We're running a little bit late on this one, so we'll have to cheat the next one. The next session is, let me get rid of this stuff. Okay, our next session is the evolution of peace. Here's the thesis of this particular session, which we'll do 5 times. Schools study history in terms of wars. We learn about the French and Indian War. We learn about the Revolution. We learn about War of 1812. We learn about God knows what wars. I think they're all the Boer Wars. They're all the same. People get killed. I find it much more challenging and relevant to study history in terms of peace. Now, this is a challenge because there's no books written about the history of peace that I've read. There's certainly no textbooks. And this requires, therefore, a complete overhaul of our habitual way of thinking about history. We study America in the framework of war. Depending upon how you count them, we've engaged in 13 major wars in 235 years of history, or one every 19 or 20 years, plus numerous in-and-out skirmishes, like the Barbary Wars or the invasion of Granada or something like that. But there have also been, count them, 185 years in which America was not at war formally or informally. Out of 235 years, we have been not at war 185 of them. That means that this country alone has been at peace with the world for 78% of its history. Fortunately, we don't have a 100-year war thrown. So how do we measure the progress of peace? I'm open for ideas here, contributions. How do we measure the progress of peace? Yes. I'm using any definition you want to use. In a second, I'm using the, I would define peace as the non-military advancement of civilization rather than the cessation of military adventuring. But because otherwise, if you define it in that way, as you define it, you're going back to studying war and then just filling in the gaps between wars. I mean, one of the great accomplishments of America was the building of the Transcontinental Railway, and it occurred during the time of, or was started during the time of Abraham Lincoln in the midst of a war. And yet it wasn't for war's purposes. There may have been some motivation there, but it was to link the East with the West. And that's a great accomplishment of peace. It's a great accomplishment of engineering. It has nothing to do with war and is not incident to war. Yes, go ahead.
I was just going to say through discovery and commerce, invention.
Okay. Those are all very good ones, each individually worth quite a bit of time. Can you elaborate on discovery and commerce and invention?
Well, I was just thinking of various inventions, like oxygen.
Or just gin.
Gin.
That could start wars. Prohibition fights.
Well, prohibition was a kind of war, wasn't it? A cultural war. Well, in terms of the booze runners and the revenue officers, yeah. Airplane? Sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Travel.
Okay, that's good. This is opening things up. What are some other definitions of how we measure the progress of peace?
Optimism.
I'm sorry?
Optimism.
Well, all right, that's getting I'm not sure that you're on strong ground there, because there's not all that much optimism in the world today. One of the great problems of, I know there is among people taking my classes, but one of the great problems in the world at large, the world out there, is a surfeit of pessimism. Pessimism hangs like a pall through mass consciousness and affects the thinking of people. And of course, one of the elements of pessimism is war is inevitable. How long will we go before we get into another war? That's part of pessimism. So I think that's a great observation, that we should think in terms of optimism, but so far there's not a whole lot of progress to be made. When you consider the theological and philosophical overtones of pessimism that run through society today, it's discouraging. Not that I'm discouraged, but it can be discouraging.
Okay, so you're saying we're at peace now, though?
not on the subject of pessimism. Well, I don't know. I guess we're actually, I wasn't counting right now as part of America's peacetime, because we're still in Iraq, we're in Afghanistan, and now we're in Libya. So I don't think we can count this as peace.
Yeah. All right. Oh, wait, you were talking in general, and I thought you were moving to right now. Okay.
Oh, in this class, we're at peace. Other measures, yes, Rose and John.
Well, this may be going backwards, but if I'm going to think about peace, I would start with the peace in your own home environment.
Okay, the peace in your own home environment.
And then that would expand out to your community, state, nation, eventually to humanity as a whole. But if you aren't in harmony in your own home, you're probably not too concerned about the war in Afghanistan.
Okay.
Or anywhere else.
Let there be peace on earth, and let it begin with me.
Right.
Yeah. And that's the process here, that if the individuals in a society are at war with themselves, or at war with society, I mean, Norway was under the illusion that they had been at peace since the end of World War II, and some lunatic went off and killed 92 people in two different locations. That's hardly a demonstration of peace in a society.
So I guess the one way to, well, let's see, they were under the illusion that they were at peace.
Right.
So the way to shatter that illusion is to be sure of the peace within yourself, whether you are at peace with yourself.
Right, and to judge how much people in your society are at peace with themselves. I think that's a vital aspect of it, that the non-involvement in war, which was talked about earlier, is actually an illusion of peace. The reality of peace is the presence of order and peacefulness, where things happen in an orderly fashion. You're not worried about bombers coming over and dropping a bomb on your head, but it's more than just an absence of war. It's the presence of specific improvements and progress. So again, how do we measure the progress of peace? I would measure it in terms of great accomplishments. And this is what Anne was getting at with discovery and invention and commerce. The climate in which the printing press came into existence, the climate in which the airplane was invented, all these things are great strides forward and the great non-war accomplishments. Yes, go ahead.
So then our basically shutting down NASA is not a good thing.
Shutting it down is not a good thing at all. Mm-hmm. Privatizing it might be the best thing that could happen, mm-hmm. because right now it's become an embarrassment to the government. The government knows that they can't shut it down entirely, but it drains a lot of money. I think when Kennedy envisioned going to the moon and said, we will go to the moon before the decade is out, that was a great moment in American history. And getting there in July, July of 1969 was a great moment. I think the peace, the space program is an incredible program of peacetime exploration. And it definitely should continue. But it needs to continue not as a government program, because it creates the idea that there are certain things only government can do. Well, the number of things only government can do can be counted on the fingers of one hand. That's back to four. Provide for defense and security. Negotiate treaties with other countries. Maintain law and order within this country. And the fourth one I can't think of.
Roads?
Well, I'm not even sure roads need to be a government kind of thing. Maybe they should be privatized. We have, my instant response to roads is that in Ohio, the Ohio Turnpike was built with privately financed bonds through the government. And it was promised that when the bonds were paid off, the road would become free.
Huh.
And the legislature couldn't tolerate the possibility that the government, the state of Ohio, would lose the income. And so when the bonds were paid off in the early 90s, no change occurred whatsoever. So the government is not a good agency to build roads. The cost factor is almost always an overrun. There's a lot of waste of money. And they're lying sons of bitches. They never keep their promises.
But weren't those the shovel-ready jobs?
Oh, those are the shovel-ready jobs, yes, of course. I think spreading manure is the only shovel-ready job that exists. Okay. So what are some other examples of great achievements?
I would say the coal industry, steel industry in the 1800s.
Uh-huh.
And I was also thinking in terms of Carnegie during peacetime, helping to build libraries, the philanthropy part of accomplishment as well.
Okay. I'm glad you mentioned philanthropy. The idea that philanthropy, by the way, this is one of the most significant standoffs in the war of ideas. Philanthropy, private philanthropy versus government welfare. And capitalism is a system that is meant to cultivate philanthropy, the loving sharing of the fruits of one's labors with those less fortunate. And this has been developing in the human family for a couple of hundred years now. Carnegie was an avatar of philanthropy, if you want to think of it that way. And yet at the same, this is capitalism's answer to Marxist redistribution of the wealth and welfare, socialist programs, where the government takes an in loco parentis, point of view, again, it becomes the nanny state. And we've seen that the nanny state is guaranteed to bankrupt any country, whether it's Greece or Spain or Portugal or Ireland or the United States. If it's sustained for very long, it will quickly run that country into bankruptcy. So we must reject nannyism and promote philanthropy. Excellent. That's a great example. You could study the development of philanthropy as an important step forward in history, but it's very recent. Rose.
So then philanthropy is helping humanity learn about the law of abundance.
Right. And how to use it. But capitalism itself is helping humanity learn about the law of abundance and how you accrue it and how this is the difference between zero-sum thinking, which is basically non-thinking, and abundance thinking, where you see that the more quickly you recycle money through a society, the more abundance can grow.
I'm just recognizing that money is an energy and it needs to move.
Money is a spiritual energy.
Spiritual energy.
And by design, moves.
Needs to
if you
be moving.
If you hoard it under your bed, you're violating it. It will become a force that destroys you. Yes.
I think you would expand philanthropy to include education in general. How if you think of Buck Duke or Duke University or even Stanford or the Rensselaer, and the great amount of money that now that's flowing from an entrepreneurial activity. In fact, Tesla's did not operate alone. He was in a competitive environment and his association with the Westinghouse in New York, Fountain, and Sears that really pushed philanthropy to the front of the stage. It was actually educational leadership. There were the top tier of universities that were funded by either businesses or churches.
Right.
Where government got involved, which is, I think, the healthiest. So there's
one of the problems here is that we have to understand, though, that most of those institutions and bringing up the church funded, the institutions, the colleges that were founded by churches, they've almost all become secular now. They've had to force the church out of it. And therefore they are, 50 years ago, the church, the religious origins of colleges was valid and legitimate. Now it's almost irrelevant. down here in Atlanta, Emory was founded as by the Methodists and with money from Coca-Cola. But Emory has, those ties are completely divorced from it. Government has stepped in and taken over and mandated all kinds of policies and things that have distorted the educational system. So we need to kick government out of education in order to rescue it. All right, getting back to the... Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, I was thinking more at the beginnings of these things rather than where they are now.
Right.
But that's certainly a place where it seems to be a drift back toward that.
Yeah. Now, let's get back to the measures or the indices of the progress of peace. I have a short list here of things. This is not comprehensive by any means, but I think the study of immigration into this country, the creation of the melting pot syndrome, the purging of old cultural traditions, and the building of a new world is all elements of peace. Yes, there might have been wars involved in there, but you can study this in terms of immigration. Most nations in the world have immigration laws that keep people from going into their country. Certainly the attitude in Britain. We have immigration laws in this country that encourage people to come and to join in. I think one of the greatest examples of peacetime accomplishments is the Marshall Plan that rebuilt Europe and Japan after World War II, the devastation. Never before done on that scale or any other scale. I think in terms of our country's history, we should study 200 years of peace with our neighbors to the north, also known as Canada. Last known war that involved a conflict between America or U.S. and Canada was the War of 1812. We've had 163 years of peace with our neighbors to the south, i.e. Mexico. These are things that we just take for granted. We don't think about them. Tell me a country in Europe that sustained 200 years of peace with its neighbors. I can't think of a single one for 1,000 years, if not longer. The emergence of the U.S. as a superpower, partly as a result of military supremacy, yes, but far more in terms of its economy and its willingness to help out, take the lead when there are natural disasters in other countries and so on. I think the spread of freedom throughout the world is one of the most productive subjects for the studying of peace. Freedom isn't spread by conquering other nations and imposing peace. The Roman Empire imposed its imperial government on nations it conquered. But there's a fascinating piece, I think Sol wrote it, maybe somebody else contributed to it. But there's been a study, and in the last 100 years, I quoted this in one of my ATMs, in the last 100 years, not a single democracy conquered another nation or went to war with another nation for conquering purposes. All the wars were started by totalitarian societies that were lusting for greater power and land. So this is freedom-loving countries don't go to war with their neighbors. So the idea of freedom, the concept of freedom is a powerful adjunct to peace. The very definition of the new world that I hinted at before, life in this country, this is not true in South America, but it's true in Canada and in this country, life in the new world is classless. Well, there's an attempt to make classes out of the very rich and the very poor. But the kind of strata that infects all of Europe and still does, and much of the rest of the world, where there is a certain class of elite people, and you can't get to be elite anyway except by being born into a family of a certain legacy. That's the only way. That has that's rapidly coming to an end, and it's the product of peace, not war. Certainly prosperity and the incredible economic engine of this country is a good source of examining peace. The demonstration that a people can govern itself. We hope that it's not about to be derailed. But so far, it's been quite successful for 234 years and 235 years. There are very few nations in the world that have they may have a longer standing tradition, but their continuity of government doesn't indicate that. We've had stable transitions. We've had transitions as a result of assassination, but the government kept on working. The Constitution worked and demonstrated that in the moment of crisis, it just we know how to continue on with smooth transitions. These are just a few examples. Many of the ones you gave are equally valid. But the point I'm getting at here is, it is legitimate to study the progress of peace as a measure of history.
Carl?
Yes.
I think that the broader inclusive term that includes a lot of those is sacrifice in the sense of making life sacred, that there's that attitude that occurred that, you know, in the United States, you know, that everybody's kind of okay, they may have some problems, but there's general respect for the individual, the sacredness of each individual, and that's, you know, we can't talk about that because we're not on talk publicly, but there is this kind of sacredness, kind of sacred character to life as it's evolving.
Well, what you're talking about is caring. We actually do care, and that translates into respect. We do care for the individuality of each other. We have made great strides. I think one of the great results, I didn't include this on the list, but the ending of slavery, I didn't include it because it actually technically happened during war. It wasn't the result of the war, but it happened during the war. And but the rooting out of those traces of slavery has been an obsession with this country, and we've made enormous progress in that, in spite of the nearsightedness of many people. So there is a level of caring for the individual human being, which is the root of self-reliance, self-sufficiency, self-government, and is unique in the world. So that's an excellent point. And
I've reflected on the point of, say, education, that I went to three pretty decent universities, and then that also had the GI Bill. And the honest answer is, I don't know. I have the sense that I had struggled finding money to go to college, but in a real sense, I don't really know who actually paid for my education. There are so many people involved in just the fabric of supporting education. I cannot identify it. You know, I can say there's a source of the school that gave it to me. I went to the military. But the people who were providing provided that support, and that's going to everyone all the time in many areas, just aren't accustomed to thinking of that or being grateful for it.
Sure. Well, it's well known that the cost of tuition at any school college is matched by monies that come from alumni support, from endowment, etc., and that enriches the educational experience. However, we've lost some of that. What was true back then for you and the rest of us is unfortunately less true today. I think we've pretty much run out of time for this particular segment. We will be continuing to talk about the progress of peace as the study of history in subsequent sessions. Let's take a break and resume at 3:30.
It is really storming here.
And if we have any problems, we're storming up quite a storm here. And so if there's any problems, interruption of electricity or internet, we'll do the best we can. But please bear with us if that occurs. See you at 3:30.